Welcome everybody to another installment of Innovation Crush. I'm Chris Denson, in case you even cared. To my left is Tamika Key. Say hello, Tamika.
Hello, everyone.
She is my lovely guest co-host today.
I'm excited about that.
Are you?
Yeah, really.
You don't look it, but I believe you for some reason. Tell us a little bit about you. I know some good stuff and some good secrets, but you give me the 101 on Tamika.
I am a former analyst and journalist covering technology, everything from video games and advertising to sort of deals and deal makers. Now I am a freelance consultant.
Told you I'd cut you off. No, I'm just kidding.
A variety of companies in the advertising and technology space.
Awesome.
Yep.
So you're gonna have a ball today.
Yes. This is we're talking to lots of interesting people.
Yes. And speaking of one, Andy Timiner, hello. How are you?
Hello.
Can I call? What's your middle name? Doane?
Doan.
Yeah. I had it all wrong in my head.
Somebody added that on Wiki.
I know. Was it?
I don't know who.
Much to your chagrin, or you don't mind?
I don't mind. It's my mother's maiden name as well. It's the Scottish Irish side being represented, and the last name's the Russian side.
Nice. So, have you been over to either of those territories?
I've been to both.
Oh, nice.
All three that I listed.
So you're so well traveled.
Well, it's part of being a documentary filmmaker.
Yes, isn't it? Yeah. I know. So, speaking of, we were talking a little bit about your travels to Sundance, right? Which is kind of like it's kind of like the prom queen returning back to the high school, because you're kind of like the poster child for what success at Sundance or in filmmaking and documentary filmmaking is. So just talk a little bit about, you know, your history as a filmmaker and just like your 10-year anniversary at Sundance, which sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was really a fantastic Sundance for me. And I've been almost every year recently because I host a show called BYOD, Bring Your Own Doc.
Yes.
We shoot at Sundance, South By, Tribeca. And we also have a studio in Beverly Hills, so we do weekly shows. We have about 127 so far.
Are you serious?
So, yeah. So this is my third. It was my fourth Sundance.
Yes.
Shooting that show.
Okay.
But 10 years ago, I brought Dig to Sundance, and literally had given birth to my son the very week I finished that film, because it was no coincidence. I was not going to bring this rock saga into motherhood. It was
right.
The two things had to be. But lo and behold, of course, I did, and cut
right
to me like breastfeeding 2 weeks later, you know, with the baby and the hand on the Avid, because I was the editor as
oh,
well.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it got into Sundance. It just corresponded with the birth of the baby, and I didn't ever know what that would do to my life or how that would affect my life, but at 11 weeks, my son was 11 weeks old. He took his first trip to Utah, and, you know, I thanked him when I won the grand jury prize for the deadline I couldn't push.
Nice.
Yeah, and then he was in 17 countries by the time he was two. And, you know, everything just kind of went from there. This last decade of my life has been an extraordinary journey, and a lot of it kicked off at Sundance. So it was very emotional,
right,
seeing many of the people that I've come to know and love, whether they're programmers or filmmakers or producers or distributors.
Well, Sundance is like it feels like a big summer camp, right, in the snow. That's one of the big, it's so fun, it's so lively, and kind of like you said, you bump into people so organically, but I can just imagine being there, and it's like a milestone, you know, time for you.
Yeah, it was very emotional, and you know, seeing people like Morgan Spurlock, who he was the class of 2004 also. You know, he came with Super Size Me, I came with Dig, we were in competition. When
nice
he won Best Director, I thought I was going to, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? 30 days eating hamburgers? And I've been like 7 years with these bands. And then I won the grand jury prize, and he was like, what? You know, it was funny.
Exactly.
But now, we're, you know, colleagues so you guys for 10 know, you, years, and I mean, friends. And, you know, he hugged me at the CNN party and was like, my life wouldn't be the same. I mean, he'd had a little
right
bit to drink, but, you know.
Yeah, go ahead, put him on blast. What else did he do that was
I
awful?
I love Morgan. Nothing was awful.
No, he's
we
awesome
danced, and we sang some very, you know, we sang like Aha and Bon Jovi, things that, you know, should stay in Park City and not be on the show. But anyway, so there was that. And then, you know, 5 years ago, I won Sundance for We Live in Public, which is
right
really a very intense, dark tale mm-hmm about the future of the internet, our willingness to trade our privacy and eventually our freedom for the recognition and connection we so dearly crave
right
online. And that, you know, that film was like a prophecy and it really come true. And so in the Sundance preview episode that we shot with the programmers that we do every year for BYOD,
right,
they pointed out that there were three very dark internet movies at Sundance this year, and that We Live in Public had kind of come to roost. And there's, you know, there's a film called Web Junkie,
mm-hmm,
that's about like 400 camps in China,
right,
where kids who are addicted to the internet are sent, and that literally it's like a boot camp, prison camp.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah, you know, it's yes, I'll let you continue. It's just
you were nodding your head. I'm like, I didn't know that there was
I
didn't know anything about it until I covered that movie. Fascinating.
That is fascinating.
And then there's, of course, Aaron Schwartz.
Yes.
Brian Knappenberger, who's a great filmmaker, made that film, Internet's Own Boy. So anyway, it was just a great Sundance, and now I'm off to South by Southwest. I have a short inside the festival as well. I'm premiering a short film about Shepherd Fairey there called Obey the Artist. It was just announced this week.
Nice.
And I love that festival. Talk about summer camp. South by Southwest is something else again.
I'm going for my first time this year. First time this year. Yeah, I know.
We always film.
Well, high five each other on the streets.
We film a total disruption there too, because it's film and interactive. Film and tech are together from the 7th to the 11th, and then it takes over then the music thing. So there's like this hackathon thing happening, and the music thing that they're trying to talk me into filming and staying in town. But essentially, I'll be totally, I don't know what. I'll have to they'll roll me out at that point, because the whole film tech thing is just overwhelming every year. It's amazing because I do a total disruption, which is a portal that I've created for entrepreneurs and innovators, and I shoot a lot of people at South By. And then I also am presenting a total disruption short.
I mean, Shepherd your schedule Ferry. Is like out of control.
It's because of the internet.
that's Donald internet. Glover's album cover title too.
Is it?
Yes.
Because of the internet?
Because the internet. And it's just kind of like, to your point, like all these behaviors and how things are blowing up and how busy we've become, you know, as a result of my laptop and my phone are right here in front of me, and a pen and a piece of paper.
And that's all you need.
Right.
You could go anywhere and do the show from anywhere.
It's
and that's
true.
The difference now. That's one thing, is it's location agnostic. But
right.
The other thing is the democratizing opportunity it's given to everyone.
Right.
You know, and especially to chief executive artists like ourselves, you know, who are literally, and I call us CEAs because we have to be.
Right.
You know, we have to kind of figure out our business.
I've said it a lot, you know, when the studios and networks were complaining that, the YouTube generation, there's a whole new generation of creators that are out there making stuff, and now we've got to find a way to compete with a Toby Turner, right, who's, you know, massive on a YouTube platform. But, but I like the fact that you said that it actually puts the onus on the higher level creatives to create better, right?
You also have to create and monetize at the same time. And I think that's a challenge that some artists and creatives struggle with, right? It's I want to create this platform, but I also have to think about the audience that I'm going to create, that I'm creating it for. I have to think about how I'm going to distribute it, how I'm going to market it. And not everyone, I don't think everyone has all of those pieces in place. Some people do, right? Like you clearly are creative, but you also have a business mind because you've created these platforms, right? But I don't know that all creators have that. They have the ability to now, but I think that it's an interesting type of person that has all of those,
right?
You know,
I think it really, if you don't, you got to find a partner who does, because I mean that's the way to not only survive but thrive these days. You've got to. And so we're creating a course, actually. What you just said is a great segue to this. I wasn't even thinking to mention this, but we're creating a course for content creators. That's called Lean Content with Eric Reese, co-authored
Lean
that.
Startup.
He wrote Lean Startup. And so he and I co-authored this thing, and we're both on camera presenting it. And it's a 10-segment course, first ever online course for content creators that teaches you how to basically use all the technology at your disposal and the internet to test your product, to create a minimum viable product, to know who your customers are, and things that artists don't necessarily want to think about, that they may think is, you know, really the antithesis of making art. But the fact of the matter is you need money to make art.
Right.
And people are willing to pay for things that they want. And that's the new culture, the crowdfunding culture, and soon with the Jobs Act, you know, the public will be able to invest in our project.
Isn't there something
the gatekeeper is in a different position. Yeah. than usual. So this is going to be an awesome course. We're really excited. We're coming out with it in like a month.
Are you doing it on General Assembly or like, or is it sort of something that you can subscribe to?
That's so funny. I'm talking to General Assembly next week, and those guys are Yaleys. They're I think a few years behind me, unfortunately. I'm an elder, but they literally, I was filming them for an episode of A Total Disruption like a week ago in New York, and I was running late from wherever the heck I was before that. And I rolled in there and I they were running out because it was like Friday night or something. And I didn't realize that Matthew Brimer was such a big fan of We Live in Public, but he was, or was it Dig? One of my films, he got out of the elevator and he's just like, I have to be in her movie. No, I'll miss the train. And like got back in the elevator. It was awesome. Yeah. And so then I thought about it. I thought, well, that'd be interesting. And this is what I wanted to say. You know, you got to form alliances these days.
Yeah.
You find like-minded people. We all have a niche that we appeal to, or many. And we make connections. Mm-hmm. And they're really much more genuine than they used to be. Because it used to be all funneled through this one, you know, top, you know, you're trying to get that record deal, you're trying to get that distribution deal. Now we can decide, Tamika and I fall in love during this radio session, and off we go.
What about me?
Well, Chris, we're going to, you know, we're going to be your major competitor soon. No, I'm kidding. I'm just saying, like, we could all decide to go do something together, and we could do that. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's such a free and amazing time, but the result is we're all super slam busy because we've made these alliances, you know, like, now I'll have probably a very fruitful conversation with General Assembly, and we'll decide to do this initiative together.
Right.
And then I'll have another thing on my plate that I need to create.
Well, it's also kind of a result of that, you know, the idea of living in public, right? I think I can get to know Tamika a lot better. Like, we literally haven't talked in probably a year plus. Yeah. But because we're Facebook friends, it's like, I still feel connected, right? We picked up right where we left off. We met at Summit Series, right? And I can pay attention to, you know, the things that you're up to. And
did you guys
it was last September. I forget.
I went to the summer thing.
Did you guys go last year?
Did you go to the summer
thing? Camping and all that?
Yes,
cool.
I did.
I didn't get to. I'm not cool.
You're cool.
I'm kidding.
That's a cool vest, by the way.
I have a bunch of friends that went.
Well, you can breathe better than the rest of us because it was pretty dusty up there.
And I have asthma, and it's not good.
I didn't mean to derail you, but I just Summit. I was like, ooh.
No, but the whole point is like,
and there's a whole thing. There's a whole subculture there.
Yes, like, exactly.
The Summit and the this and the
Elliot,
that.
Elliot, you still have your invitation out there.
Hatch.
I know.
Hatch is amazing. Have you been to Hatch yet?
No, I haven't, but I've
you
heard of it.
Come to Hatch.
Yes?
It's by invitation, but I'll work on it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I love this show. So, you know, so many great blessings have come this way. I'm writing it down in really big notes. You heard that, Anthony, right? We are recording.
You should have Yarrow, who founded Hatch, on the show.
I would love to.
Okay.
Yarrow it is. Wow. Okay. Yarrow, Elliot, everybody's coming. Tamika's here.
I'm going to come.
Anthony's here.
I'm going to just show up at Hatch. Like, hey. Me and my vest. Yeah,
totally. You know what? It's in Big Sky, Montana. So if you show up, they'll definitely take you in because it's out of the truck stuff.
So on the other side of like these genuine connections you can develop, right? There was also sort of this disconnect, right? I don't know if anybody saw the movie Her. Right.
Yes.
And it's on my mantle. I've only seen 9 minutes because my son and another boy were in the room and I was like, okay. Yes. By 9 minutes, I'm like, close the
light. Like, oh, I didn't know they were going to do that.
Right.
Was it the dead cat scene?
It was just him talking to double wide, talking to the woman like back. And I was just like, this is
she didn't get up to the cat.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not up to the cat yet, but for everybody out there, it's now ruined. There's a dead cat apparently.
It's not ruined. Trust me. It is equally surprising no matter how many people have told you about it. The social commentary part of that film for me was also like the human disconnect, right? And this really in-depth connection with a device. And there's like a barrier, right? It's like a thin, opaque layer between us because if you look at how the film is shot, even in the first 9 minutes, people are walking around and there's very little eye contact. There's very little person-to-person interaction. You know, I don't know if you covered that sort of social piece in We Live in Public, but I would love for you to kind of expound on my blatherings.
There's very much a dark side, and that's a part of it is that we, you know, and We Live in Public, there's a bunker and 150 people move in and live under constant surveillance, and it's true. It literally happened, and there were 110 surveillance cameras through the space, and everybody had their own TV channel and their own feed.
Right.
And they would strive. The idea was to watch how they strive to one-up each other with their feed. And they would sign, you know, waivers and fill out 500 very personal questions and put on uniforms and live in a, you know, in a pod in with the air quality very much undetermined, bad. Because there was an acetone leak, some sculpture that we were making before they even came. There was a geodesic dome shower. There was a firing range with automatic weapons. All of this was 20 blocks from the courthouse in Tribeca, right on Broadway between Franklin and Leonard. And they came streaming in. There was not even, you know, there was no paucity of population there. And they were ready to risk their lives, basically, and give up their freedom and be interrogated and all this stuff just to have their lives matter right then at the turn of the millennium. And it was it portended this time where we will just sign over terms and conditions that we've not read. Those terms and conditions.
It's like millions and millions of hours of unread terms and conditions and privacy policies.
There's a movie called Terms and Conditions May Apply that's really worth watching, although what the heck do you do about it? I mean,
exactly.
What you do is what I said, and I did the voiceover for We Live in Public, which I never do for my movies, but my team kind of ganged up on me, made me do it. But and I tried to
drag you down in the bunker and
you know, that was 10 years in the making, We Live in Public, and 5,000 hours of footage. So the bunker was in 1999 and the film premiered in 2009. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I was able to finish the film was when I realized the first Facebook post, and it said, "I'm driving west on the freeway," posted 2 hours ago. And I thought, am I late for a meeting in Santa Monica? And then I was like, wait a second, that guy's just announcing that he got on the freeway and he's going to Santa Monica. And then people, I thought, well, who cares? Why is he saying that? You know?
Yeah.
And then there were these comments like, awesome, see you there, or come by this cafe. And I thought, oh my God, I'm in the bunker. Like, I can make this movie now. Like, it's all coming true. So that's what motivated us to finish the film.
But you said something really interesting about people wanting to matter, right? And the internet and social media gives people that platform to matter, right? Like,
no, to feel that they matter,
or to feel like they matter, to feel like there's an audience, to feel like there's someone out there who's listening, who thinks that they're important.
And, at any time, day or night, 24/7, and there's like, it replaces the church. You know, you don't have to dress a certain way, you don't have to look a certain way. You can show up anytime. There'll be people there. Right? But are they really there?
I mean, exactly. Are you alone? And are you really there, right?
And are you really there?
I think,
or are you phoning it in?
And I think a lot of people will, like, there's a persona, like, either everybody's happy, like, you know, I had a terrible morning this morning, right? But I didn't Facebook it, right? My last Facebook post was something silly, and, you know, so when people run into me that, you know, like, she and I haven't seen each other, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, right? You know what I choose to put out.
And that was my advice to people, was what you just did, which is, you know, it's a construct of reality. But the fact is, once you put it out there, it's never yours to make private again.
Right.
So if you want to, spill your heart out about your terrible morning online, everybody's going to walk up to you all day long, even when you feel better, and say, "I'm so sorry."
Exactly.
And you're going to really regret that you did that.
I'd never put bad news out there.
But even back towards her, right? You were talking about all of this disconnection.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's job was to write love letters for people.
Exactly.
People who could not write, like, we're in a relationship, I'm gonna pay someone to write my love letter to you. How much more disconnected from your humanity can you be? And I think that's the place that we're sort of starting to get to. Have you read The Circle?
No.
It's by Dave Eggers. It's a really insane book, and it sort of talks about this convergence of, like, Facebook and Twitter. And imagine, let's say Google buys Twitter and Facebook, and then Amazon buys all of them, and now there's this one giant company that controls all of our data. You literally, there's one point where this girl, the main character, she goes to work for this amazing company, and she goes to take, like, a health exam. They give her a chip. They put a chip in her body that then starts to monitor how she's feeling, how she's thinking. Are they giving her too much work? Like, and it sends them continuous feedback. Like, it's literally this horrifying vision of the future where we are all connected at all times, and we're all sort of life casting. And it felt really uncomfortable. I went to CES a couple of weeks ago, and there were these two products. One was called Narrative, and it's a little camera.
Oh yeah,
it's this big. It every 30 seconds shoots a photo every 30 seconds, and then uploads it to a private server. if I want to make that server public, now someone can literally see what I have done every minute of every day of my life. Do I need to live cast? Do we all need to be, do we need to create that much content and put it out there so that we can be connected?
You know what's funny is it's just dawned on me. I've spent my whole life documenting, you know, or since 19 years old, right. I picked up a camera and I never stopped. And for my 20s, I never dropped the camera. I filmed everything, you know? So I'm very much, I mean, I like the sound of that camera because, but it's just funny that the world has come around to where the psychosis that I had in the first place, you know what I mean?
Which was what?
Constant documenting, you know, like documenting.
But why?
Everything.
Like, what was it that made you go?
I think life is so amazing. I wanted to record the serendipity of life and recreate it for people. I felt like people weren't watching documentaries because they thought they were like eating spinach or reading history books, like too educational to be entertaining.
Right.
So I wanted to make them suspense-driven narratives. I felt that what we were missing was that what's going to happen next. That kind of lose yourself into the story,
right?
And I felt like we, you know, I wasn't interested. And
well, there's that line between good information and good storytelling, right? Like, and I think you've been on the ladder for the one of the things I wanted to ask you. Just when I look at Wikipedia or just, you know, Google you, and I see MoMA, I see Bill Clinton, I see, you know, this roster of accomplishment. What defines excellence from Andy Timmerner's point of view?
For me, wow. I mean, you know, right now I've turned my camera towards a woman named Amanda Palmer. Mm-hmm. Do you know who she is?
I don't.
She had the biggest Kickstarter in music history.
Okay.
$1.2 million she raised for a record and got a lot of flack for it. You know, why do you need $1.2 million for a record? She said, but this isn't just a record. I'm giving out art books. I'm doing house parties for $5,000. She shows up and plays at your house. You know, it's an alternative way of making a career.
Right.
And she has a fan base that is so dedicated to her and to each other that have found who they are and their community through her work and in an interaction with her work. So I'm making, right now, she's the star of a series called CEA, Chief Executive Artist, on a TotalDisruption.com.
Right.
And I'm looking to expand that into a feature-length film called 1 Million Misfits, which is about her Twitter following. To me, when I think about your question, what is success?
Excellence.
You know, she's married to Neil Gaiman, the author, as well. I think about Amanda because I think about you know, a flawed human being who wrote a poem to the Boston Bombers, who crowdsourced her musicians and got a lot of shit for it,
right.
You know, who has inspired the ire of many people because she just trailblazes. And that idea of, and you know, and I guess whatever I've done that's excellent or successful, I think follows that line. It's like to be dedicated to your vision, to be true and authentic in the world, you know, to really be... wow, somebody's on a total disruption. I hear my theme song.
All during a Tinder moment and everything. I'm like,
my father founded an airline the year I was born, and he was just an entrepreneur.
Right.
Was an entrepreneur, is still with us, thank God. But he had a massive stroke when I was 9. His neck was cracked during a massage, and he lost. It was the fastest growing airline in the history of America.
Wow.
It's called Air Florida, and I grew up seeing him break every rule. He pushed deregulation through Congress. He introduced hot pants into the airline industry, and that catch me if you can sort of era. I'm actually right.
And this airline's no longer around, huh?
It's not around.
I don't see hot pants.
The closest thing to it is Southwest.
Good movie too, by the way.
Southwest and that whole latitude. Like,
yeah.
We get on the plane, like Governor Graham of then Governor Senator Graham of Florida, when he was running, went on the plane and handed out graham crackers, and like, you know, when he won the route to London
right.
for petitions, he had a marching band meet everybody at the airport, and he had, you know, Rolls Royce take everybody for passengers, you know, from Gatwick into London because it was too long a drive. He felt like he just did everything with flair.
Right.
And I feel like I really have inherited that spirit. I have known for my feature films, but I've tried to create a total disruption, to create a vision of what we artists need to do, we need to picture our documentaries as sustainable businesses. Mm-hmm. We need to create a way to generate revenue while we're making the work.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I think is excellent. I mean, if you want to say what I'm doing right now that's excellent, I think it's like, I'm taking a risk, a big risk. I've bootstrapped it.
Yep.
You know, we raised a bunch of money. We had 150% funded Kickstarter last year. We blew through that money. We raised a bunch more for branded content. Now we've got to try to get real investment because we're out of money again. And we're building a platform where all of my data, all my video will be searchable down to the word. So the 56% of Americans who have started their own small business and mm-hmm. want to do it better, smarter together, and the rest who are starting businesses mm-hmm. this year, and the rest want to be artists, right? So
right.
Most of America is either starting their own business, getting fired because they've been replaced by a robot, and now they have a chance to pursue their
right.
dreams for the first time. They need something like this where they can go on there and search for anything they want. How do I name my business? And they can hear from Kevin Systrom from Instagram
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
Jack Dorsey from Twitter and, you know, on how they name these companies.
Yep.
Tony Hsieh, how did Zappos' name come to be? Or they can find out how to test a product or whatever. And that's actually a heavy piece of technology that we're building. But once that platform's built, because it's never existed before.
It will be a total disruption. Complete
and
disruption.
And everyone will put their footage on there or
right.
build their own, you know, because it'll be open source. And we're working with Matt Mullenweg, who founded and created
Six
WordPress.
Right.
Yeah.
And Alexis Ohanian, who founded Reddit, is our chief strategy advisor. And Eric Reese is a content advisor. And, you know,
well,
we're working with the right people to do this. It's a revolution.
Was that your goal when you created A Total Disruption? Or did you just want to tell these stories, right? And I think you have this interesting perspective where you look at any creator as an artist, right? If you create a business and you're awesome at it and you knock it out of the park, I can't paint or pick up a brush to save my life. I can't pick up a camera. I can't edit, you know. But I feel like my spirit comes through in certain things that I'm really good at.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk to, I forget the guy's name who started SoundCloud. He was also at Summit.
Alex.
Yes.
I met him at Summit.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Summit.
Yeah, exactly, right? Elliot. But no, I think there's this really interesting perspective. Was that what you set out to do, was tell the story, or did you set out to build a platform for inspiration and search and so on and so forth?
It's funny because I have always felt as a filmmaker, you nailed it, that I'm a startup entrepreneur, you know, and I feel like we all are. The difference is there's not that billion-dollar exit in the future. There's
right.
just a film that hopefully is going to travel around a little bit. And now with the internet, it might reach even more people
right.
or be pirated right away, which is fine also for most of those artists. We don't care. But like the thing is now, it's possible and important to constantly release your work as you're going. And
right.
I, that was the thing that made me think, well, wait a second. I don't think people have time for, you know, like when I started Dig, it was following two bands over 7 years, you know, and it's following a story that I had no idea what would
yeah.
happen. I just followed these characters because I had a central question. Can an artist maintain their integrity when they're doing business? That
mm-hmm.
was the question. It was really a question I was trying to answer for myself.
Right.
So I started with 10 bands, ended up with these two because they had everything. They had this star-crossed love rivalry. It was like
yeah.
the real Amadeus, you know? And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? One was signing to Capitol. One kept destroying the record deals.
Yep.
It was amazing. And so I just kept going, and it was stranger than anything I could have written. And then now fast forward to 10 years later, I started Total Disruption 2 years ago. So like 8 years later, I'm looking at the scene again and I'm going, this is fine. And you know what? We've entered a golden age of documentary. Everything's cool. Now a lot of people are doing suspense-driven stuff. What's the
mm-hmm.
next step? And the next step is actually creating shorter pieces
mm-hmm.
because we don't have the attention span or the time anymore, and we have too much to choose from and too much of an embarrassment of riches of information and work that we want
yeah.
to view, that we need to keep up on. We're, you know, we all of us have a watch list and a read list and a bucket list of every kind of thing, you know, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
So like we as filmmakers need to get our ideas across, get that character across, reach into people's hearts and minds quickly. Really
yes.
fast, you know, like as if the opening of your film that you work on, I always work on my openings like crazy. The opening of the film is the film.
Right.
You know, like, bam, here's
what,
3 minutes and
well, what
you're
going to
learn
lose?
This thing.
What do you lose when you do that, right? Because, you know, you go from a 90-minute topic down to, you know, 3 6-minute bites or not even that in some cases.
But I will make a film. I mean, I don't want to admit it. I'd like to not admit things to myself for a while. But, I mean, the thing is my films that won Sundance, and I have 5 or 6 feature-length films that I've made, but the two that won Sundance and are in the Museum of Modern Art are both made 7 years and 10 years in the making.
Right.
And I think there's no coincidence there. It's
mm-hmm.
like time provides a narrative that if I followed your life,
yeah.
it would be infinitely fascinating over
True.
The next 5 years. Or your life, you know, anybody's life, you know, because we just can't even predict what's going to happen. And then when it's happening, we're like, why is this happening? And then when we look back, we think, this is amazing. So if I looked around at my colleagues, because I know what they're doing, because I'm doing BYOD and I know what everybody's up to now. I used to be in my own shell, my own spaceship. Now I'm aware. And because you can't be dumb on the internet, as you know.
It's true.
So I'm looking around. I'm going, well, who's documenting the internet revolution? Because this is the greatest shift in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to document it. Oh, wait. I'm the right person to document it because I know all these people and we live in public anyway up in Silicon Valley. And, you know, that'll get me in the door. And then it's been like a war of attrition. You know, it's like a great interview then leads to five more because they recommend me to the next people. Yeah. I thought, let me document the people that are driving this great change. And then I will document the old guard that's falling. And then I will document the white matter that's happening on our brains. And I will get to the her aspect of the disconnect of the screens and the negative side, probably for a feature film.
Right.
But in the meantime, for these shorts, let me keep it real and positive, you know, and let me share the inspiration, the DIY attitude, and humanize technology and make it more accessible so that the masses that are losing their jobs and having to transition can see that they can actually find those people down the street to sell their pumpkin pies to now.
Right.
You know,
it's interesting because I think we look at some of these people as special, right? And you go like, oh, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, special. You know,
totally normal dude. And all artists need to realize that those other guys are artists too, like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an artistry to it and it's called surfing.
Right.
You figure out, right? You're like, whoa, the wave switched direction and then you got to switch. It's like, I call it life surfing. You know, the better you are at that and embracing change and being nimble and being quick, the more likely you are to succeed.
The question I have though is as the jobs are shifting and as everyone is becoming more entrepreneurial, is there space for everyone to be a content creator? And if so, is there space for everyone to monetize themselves as a content creator?
I don't think everybody wants to be a content creator. And I think that, you know, talking to the Sundance programmers this year, I think they had 1,700 submissions and they chose 120 films.
Yeah.
So that's they had a 1%
acceptance rate.
Yeah. It's like there will be more content creators because now if you're born in a trailer park, you can still make a movie.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah.
But if you don't make a good movie.
No pun intended, by the way, trailer park. Movie trailer.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean, right? Like you know what I mean? Like it is a more even playing field, but there's only still that handful of great storytellers. You know what I mean? I think.
I think that's true too. I think the math hasn't changed, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to see the math being take place, right? Because you've got all this stuff in the middle and a lot on the bottom. And you still have the best ones that are rising to the top, right? And that model hasn't changed. It's just a broader spectrum of stuff to sift through. So when you look at like the billion users on YouTube, right? And you look at the small percentage that are tens of millions of views monthly, it's a super small percentage. It's not.
Yeah, but you know what? My son watches, you know, Minecraft videos on YouTube that have 80 million times the views that my Total Disruption stuff has, you know? So my egghead sort of, you can do this, you know, let's share and get smarter, faster together. And, you know, let's humanize tech. And isn't Jack Dorsey cool? Check it out. You can be him. I think that's the cat's meow, but really cats peeing in trees and like playing piano is going to go a lot further. You know what I'm saying?
We had a guest recently who also just said like YouTube is kind of celebrating mediocrity, especially when it comes to storytelling.
Just niche audiences that are obsessive will embrace and share, you know, but it doesn't mean that the rest of us who are making really good content should stop making that content.
No, not at all.
Those views, they may be less, but they're extremely important. They may be more impactful, you know.
You're also talking about one platform, right? Like, you know, you're not going to show 9 times out of 10, there's a rare place where you can go and show a Minecraft video to an audience in the theater and they walk away inspired, right? But, you know, I spent some time with a company called Machinima, and, you know, when you look at Minecraft creators and how it inspires other, you know, your son to like, I want to be that, you know, Sky Does Minecraft, right? He wants to be that individual. And then kind of put a piece of you in him as well, in terms of, you know, the higher level of excellence and things like that. As we start to close, I wanted to, the show's called Innovation Crush, as you know, right? Everybody knows it.
I mean, we all,
Anthony, you know that?
Crush it.
You crush. Yes, you definitely crush it. I wanted to ask you, what is your current innovation crush? Like, what is something out there that you see that's kind of like, you know, amazing or inspirational to you as a creator, or just a phenomena in the world?
I'm really interested in the disruption of education. Mm. I really feel like it's something that has been, and just the disruption of legal as well. I feel like these are areas that have just been hiding behind smoke and mirrors. They've been, you know, we know all this and you're going to pay us this amount of money and we're going to give you this degree. And it's something that, you know, and I'm an Ivy League educated human who was cum laude, and I was into it. I loved it. You know, I love my schooling, but I didn't actually write papers. I made films instead of write papers. And I made them at a public access station because Yale didn't have any film ability, whatever. And I didn't go to film school. And I feel like the disruption of education is something. Most people aren't as lucky as I was to have gotten to go to that school. And they're waiting for a seat for an algebra class for 3 years on a waiting list, and for a community college. And they could be taking that course from the greatest professor on earth and getting credit for it in a massive open online course or a MOOC. Mm-hmm. And they could be using a digital textbook.
What a MOOC.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a digital textbook.
Yes.
You know, that there's a foundation that we did a piece about on A Total Disruption you should check out, called 20 Million Minds Foundation. Hmm. And they make digital textbooks. So what they're doing is they're taking all the 101 courses and putting them in waterproof readers, you know, and it's $60 for the reader, and then you're done instead of the $700 per semester that the average student pay. You know, you notice at these colleges, they're surrounded by, you know, $1 Jack in the Box and Burger King with a $1 Whopper or whatever, because the kids can't even eat, because they can't afford to eat well, because they're busy trying to get through school, and work a job, and pay for these textbooks, which are outdated from the minute they're printed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they're already outdated because we already have new information coming from the internet. Mm-hmm. So these digital textbooks are like DJ textbooks, like mix and match, rip and burn, change it all as it goes.
Books
different
by Dre.
Professors can do it.
God forbid.
We're not too far off.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I love that. And I love Nolan Bushnell, who founded Atari.
Yes.
He has a new company called Brain Rush. I just interviewed him. We're going to have a piece coming out real soon.
He's
on
awesome.
That. You know, I'm very interested in seeing how that all happens. There's a new film, a documentary you should check out called Ivory Tower, made by Andrew Rossi. We just covered it on BYOD. It's also about this, and really looking at when we can get accreditation for anything we take, wherever we take it, suddenly you're going to be able to hire people that have 17 different courses that fit that particular job you're looking for, instead of that blanket, I got a BA.
And let's figure
whatever,
it out. And
you know, so it's all changing, and there's some really beautiful aspects to look at. I'm just excited to be alive in this day and age and documenting it.
Last thing before you go,
I'm out of here.
Deep breath. Oh, you're just gonna all upset, rip your mic off. it's happened before. No, it hasn't. Well, Anthony did it once. Finish this phrase for me. Innovation to me is.
Innovation to me is seeing where something can be better and figuring out how to make it better and then executing on that. I could probably say it in less words if you gave me a second, but.
No edits here, remember? No. No, that was great. No, I get it though.
Innovation,
you're absolutely right.
Is essential, and innovation is possible. And my favorite phrase these days is innovate your independence.
Innovate your independence. I like that.
That
will
like
be twittered.
I'm literally like,
that's what A Total Disruption's all about.
Nice.
Empowering people to innovate their independence.
So how can people find you and find your work and, you know, what's your cell phone number and license plate and all that good stuff?
Well, 697. Just call.
So sultry.
My voice. My Twitter handle is a good spot. It's at Andy Timoner. And I put out all my BYODs, all my ATD releases there. You should subscribe to atotaldisruption.com to get smarter and just get your little dose every 10 days of something that'll inspire you.
I will do that.
And then at Total Disruption, not at A Total Disruption, but at Total Disruption on Twitter. And then, yeah, a bunch of fan pages, whatever. You can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn, all those fun places.
Lengthy, exciting Wikipedia page is out there.
Yeah, that's a funny one. You have to check that once in a while.
You do.
Every year I go, uh-oh, because one time somebody put some funky middle name for me in there, like Schlossabosser or something, as a joke. You know, you have to keep an eye on that thing.
Yeah, that was me.
But I'll see you on the internet.
Yes, on the internet.
We will connect and be alone simultaneously. But I agree with you that we should all try to connect in our physical spaces. And I really do like those sites and those platforms that allow us to do that.
Like Innovation Crush. You got to come here.
Thanks for making a trek,
by the way, across the
It's a wonderful office you have, but it's down by the airport.
You always have some place to go, so you can stop by anytime.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I do come by a lot. Actually, I do roll right by your office
exactly.
all the
here
time.
Here you go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Andy Timoner. I'm too bad you didn't correct me the other times I said your name. And Tamika, thank you for joining us as well. Anthony, thank you for your hard work and service.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it. On the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.